Hi there. Do you have any books on how to get rid of ghosts?
Have you tried telling them you're ready for a commitment?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Oh, like a relationship.
Exactly. That'll send them running, huh?
I like her.
Here you go. Maybe this'll help.
Now, we'll move away from sort of this sort of negativity in a sense and go to a different kind of negativity, because people are always sort of fascinated by like evil and demons and sort of that frightening stuff that scares them and that all that yeah. Bad stuff, if you will, or good stuff that's bad. So I guess tell me like a little bit maybe about what kind of experiences you had in dealing with the darkness that's out there and you know, have you perceived it in any sort of tangible way?
I was raised in the Catholic faith, and I certainly had heard a lot about the angelic realm, and I'd heard some things about the demonic realm. I believe that the world is built on opposites and dichotomies, if you can believe that. And I do. I believe, you know, hot and cold, day and night, dark and light, whatever. Mm-hmm. Every yin has a yang. And if you believe in pure good, you've got to believe in pure evil. So that being said, I never felt like I'd been touched by anything within the demonic realm. And back to Paranormal State for a moment. When I went and did my first episode of Paranormal State, I was baptized by fire. I was like thrown directly into that on the first episode I did. And, you know, people have said, oh, there were so many demons on that show. You know, I don't go back and count, watch the episodes. It's just a handful of episodes that dealt with dark energies mm-hmm. that were called demonic. But yeah, I feel like I've actually been in the presence of some demonic things. I feel like some demonic things have actually bragged and communicated with me. I feel like I've had to do battle in a couple of instances with things that were from the demonic realm. Am I very guarded and protected against that? Yes. My Native American name should be Travels with Holy Water. You know, I have crucifixes and St. Benedict medals and St. Michael medals, and I'm armed with prayer and a very strong belief system, so I layer on the protections as heavily as I can. But you hear a lot, Tim, about the negative stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's so sensational, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if that's you hear about the dark stuff a lot more, and sadly enough, a lot of people like that stuff. You know, they like the spookiness of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why they start selling Halloween candy in the middle of September. It's like that's part of the reason.
Well, let's put it this way: some of the stores in the Atlanta area already have Halloween stuff out.
Oh my God!
I know, it's sad.
It really is. It's scary how they do that, but yeah, people like that sort of titillating nature of
they
the
do.
Evilness.
They do.
I don't know if that's even necessarily good for us as a people. You know what I mean? It's like, it seems like society's getting darker and people are still, it's like maybe this embrace of the sinister, you know, of the anti-hero.
Well, and you know, look at what I'm doing. I don't know if you've heard this, but look at what I'm doing at the end of October. I'm doing a show on Destination America Network called Exorcism Live. And it is going and looking at the absolute true story of The Exorcist, the story of the boy who was possessed from Maryland, who was taken to St. Louis for an exorcism. And we are going to explore the full story of Ronnie Doe, which is the name given to the young man who was actually possessed, whose story sort of became the movie The Exorcist. So, you know, people like this sort of stuff.
And what's your role going to be on that?
I'm doing some hosting things on that. I'm actually going to be a psychic and a medium on that production and serve as the primary sensitive on the show, who's going to try to feel some things about the people and the locations associated with it. And the show will culminate, I can't talk a lot about it, but it will culminate with an actual appearance in the house where he lived when he was in St. Louis.
Wow. Sounds good. Sounds spooky.
It is kind of spooky.
Well, be safe.
Yeah, and, you know, from what I understand, they're going to give it their entire primetime block. that evening, and it's going to be a live production. And, you know, it's exciting to me, and it's one of those things. Well, one of the things I've demanded from the network is, you know, you've got to have a Catholic priest there with a 55-gallon drum of holy water, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to have a priest standing by in case shit gets real. He's going to spring into action.
Now, you do a lot of media appearances, unlike mainstream media, which I'm really impressed by. What's that? What's it like, I guess, in that sort of situation? We'll sort of switch gears a little bit here. It's kind of similar. Cause I know you're going to be doing a lot of sort of appearances to promote this thing in October. So it's like, what is it like when you have to do these things? Do you feel, because you said before, it's like when you take these standardized tests, you're kind of under the gun. It's like, must be difficult to be put in a position where, you know, you're on some talk show like Wendy Williams or something like that, and then you got to sort of perform, you know, for them. It's,
well, a lot of times people have seen me on TV in work mode, and that serious Chip in work mode. Chip is in work mode now. He's talking to the dead, and he's going in and battling the demons, blah, 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 whatever. You know, and I've got a funny, irreverent, witty side, and like I said before, I don't take myself too seriously, but I take my work very seriously.
Right.
I've been on the Queen Latifah show. I did her Halloween show. I went with Bridget McManus, who is her warm-up comedian and sidekick. Bridget and I, she's a lovely woman. I love her and her wife Carmen. They're two of my best friends. I love them to death. But we went and explored the back lot at the studio, and then I went on and did an appearance there. I've been on Drunk History, for crying out loud. So, you know, I'm trying to show that I'm not St. Chip of Georgia. I've got a foul mouth. I'm the son of an Irish sailor, you know, and a frequently whacked out mother. But, you know, it's, you know, I've got this charming, personable, irreverent, self-effacing side to me that, you know, that I wanted to be able to show more of. So I've got a new internet project coming up, a web series is coming up that is kind of going to explore that side a little bit. It's, you know, that was what I was doing in New York last week. I was filming some episodes for my new web series. And, you know, it's going to show kind of a different side of me. It's still got a little of the paranormal because that's what people expect from me. But it's much more of a fun and lighthearted side to Chip, because I don't want people to think that I'm this, you know, always this serious, moribund kind of guy. I just don't want to be that one-dimensional to people.
Right, right. Well, I appreciate that because, you know, it's a really heady topic, and I'm glad you're so easygoing and we can laugh a lot here on the show because, you know, I get concerned sometimes. Cause I've heard you before, so I knew what you were like, so that's kind of why.
Well, and ask people who've met me at events. You're going to be at an event with me in Nova Scotia in just a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever your perception of me might have been prior to that, I can vastly say that I think that once people who have seen me on TV meet me in person, for good or for bad, their perception of me changes a bit.
Yeah.
And I would like to think that it changes to where they go, hey, you know, he really is a bit charming and personable. So I would hope that that's what the takeaway is. You know, that I'm not some, you know, oh, he's just got a stick up his butt and he's always very serious and blah, 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 blah. No, that's very unlike me for the most part.
Right, right. And if we want people to sort of, you know, have a more open mind about this, we need folks more with your personality and all this. You know what I'm saying? It goes beyond just what you do in your field to also sort of all these paranormal fields in a sense. Because, you know, a lot of the people who are in some of these other fields like UFOs and Bigfoot and stuff, they seem like they have a stick up their butt sometimes, you know. They seem really like, you know, this is the biggest secret in the world and we need to get – it's like, geez, man, lighten up, you know. It's a story of aliens coming to the world. Like, just it's hilarious if you take a moment just to think about it. So lighten up. So it's great that that you have that attitude, because we've had that attitude on the show for a long time.
Let's talk about aliens for a second.
Sure.
They scare the shit out of me.
Aliens scare you?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I don't know. I think I know what a ghost and a demon is. I've got a pretty good idea of what those guys are. I don't know what aliens are. You know, and aliens, you know, no.
Have
no,
you
no,
tried
no,
to, like, figure it out from your sources on the other side? Do they ever tell you anything?
I don't ask that question because I don't necessarily want to know. Aliens scare me because it's kind of like I saw that episode on Twilight Zone, To Serve Man. You know, I know they're going to come here and say, he looks tasty. Or, you know, they're going to come here and try to poke and prod me. You know, you're not going to probe me, bitches. You're not going to do that. I will cut a little alien bitch. You know, it's not going to happen. You know, it's just no. Aliens. I had somebody who's very big into the UFO community tell me, well, you know, once people have met me, lots of times they have their own contact or abductee experience. I'm like, hell no.
Yeah, you're like, nice to meet you. I'll see you later.
Hell no. Get away from me. Oh,
yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess they are spooky, but I don't know.
They are.
I've never run into them, so luckily no, I don't have to.
Yeah, I'm perfectly okay with staying over here in my little corner with ghosts.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We sort of look at all this on the show here from like a meta level in a lot of ways, and it's interesting. You know, we look at sort of the ebbs and flows and popularity of all these different topics and sort of how things have become, you know, they have their booms and their busts. And it's interesting that, you know, I remember, and I'm sure you'll be able to tell me sort of a better idea of the time frame, but I remember sort of when this whole John Edwards, like, psychic medium thing exploded. It was like a big, big thing for like a few years, you know, and then it kind of faded away and sort of into the background a little bit. And if anything, probably the ghost field sort of overtook it. But I mean, what do you make of, I guess, that sort of downturn in, I guess, media popularity of this stuff, in the sense that, you know, like I said, I mean, this guy's show was huge, and then maybe it was just a fad. I don't know, but it's sort of interesting.
Has it really? I mean, I hadn't noticed. I mean, you've still got Kim Russo has a show on called The Haunting of. You've still got
Long Island. Yeah, I don't keep track of
Long Island Medium on television. John, to the best of my knowledge, does not have a current show on air. I know Char Margolis had a show on for a while. James Van Prague did. You know, Sylvia Brown was a constant, you know, fixture on Montel. My friend Alison Dubois, who was the inspiration for the TV show Medium. You know, I don't know that I've seen a real downturn in it. I think that, just like you said, there's an ebb and flow. TV shows, hey, I had a show called Psychic Kids. It lasted for 3 seasons. And the network didn't want to fund it anymore, so, you know, it went off the air. So it's just one of the things, it's the natural attrition. You have other shows that come and go.
Right, right.
You have people, you know, Meryl Streep hadn't done a movie for a little while, and now she's back in Ricky and the Flash. So you've got people that will take a little respite period from doing work to live their lives or do whatever. So, you know, do I see a downturn in things? Maybe a little bit, but I think that people are still interested, and I think for a while the market was getting too overglutted,
yeah.
And everybody wanted a television show, and everybody was filming a pilot or doing a sizzle reel. And I don't know that that's changed a lot, but I think that the networks are becoming much more selective about what they're putting on. They just don't want the same old ghost show, because it's kind of like one of those things, been there, done that. I mean, you've got Ghost Adventures, you've got Ghost Hunters. Both of those shows have had long lifespans. And they just don't want the same show, you know, revisited with a different cast. They want a new twist to things.
Right, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. And you make a good point. It's like, I don't keep close enough eye on all this. So there could have been like 12 different shows on right now that I don't even
know. And there probably are.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, watching a lot of those shows for me is like, if you understand the term busman's holiday, that was an old term back in the day that was used when a bus driver was going to go on vacation. He didn't go on a bus tour.
Exactly.
He wasn't taking a busman's holiday.
Exactly.
So I don't usually take a lot of busman's holidays. I don't regularly watch a lot of the ghost shows on television. I'll catch them if I happen to be watching. But for me, that's kind of like, I live this. I don't necessarily want to watch it. I'm going to watch Mariska Hargitay on Law & Order SVU. I have a crush on her, so.
She is fantastic. Yeah, it's like someone who's a chef. They don't go home and watch the Food Network. It's like they don't want to.
No.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. Because people, you know, they'll ask me about other podcasts and stuff like that. And it's like, well, I don't have to, you know, when I'm not doing my show, I don't listen to other shows because I need a life. You know, I need a break from this stuff.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, so. It's an interesting dynamic. Now it's another interesting sort of dynamic in a sense is that, like, you know, we've talked about the ghost thing. It's like the with ghosts, it's like ghost hunters, they're coming at this phenomenon from a whole different area that you are, but you're all kind of coming at the same sort of thing, which is someone that's passed over. Do you know what I mean? It's an interesting dynamic in a way. What do you make of sort of the explosion and interest in ghost hunting from someone who, you know, you're in a unique position where it's like you don't have to hunt ghosts. They come to you. So it's like, what do you make of that sort of phenomena?
Well, you know, back in the day when I first started doing what I'm doing, I've been a professional psychic and medium since the middle of 2001. And, you know, one of the things that was very important to me was, even though I grew up in a haunted house and had been touched by ghostly presences in my own environment all through my childhood, I really wasn't aware of how to actually use all the bells and whistles and all the electronic gadgets and things that paranormal investigators and ghost hunters use. So I made it my point to learn how to use those. There's a woman that is a very dear friend of mine, actually very much like my extended family, named Patty Starr. And Patty lives in Lexington, Kentucky, and she teaches a class on how to become a paranormal investigator. And I studied with Patty and learned a lot. The basis for my knowledge of paranormal investigating came from Patty Starr. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of other people in the years since. But, you know, I think the goal, like you said, the goal is the same. It's actually being able to bridge the gap between the two realms, the two dimensions, to actually facilitate some level of interaction or communication between the two realms. And I don't think that the person who's using all the bells and whistles and gadgets is vastly different than I am. You know, my psychic ability is my instrument.
Right.
You know, my ability to tune in is my gadget. So, you know, I jokingly call it my tool, although I don't like being called a tool. But, you know, it's that's kind of like my tool.
Right.
I have some of the bells and whistles. I have the flashlights. I have the meters. I have some other pieces of equipment that I can break out if I need them. But typically when I go on investigations, I don't use a lot of equipment. But the goal of the traditional paranormal investigator and the psychic and medium is pretty much the same, to facilitate that communication.
Well, is it like a greater challenge for you in the sense that, like you said before, when you're doing a reading, you have the information about, I guess when you go on a ghost hunt, you have the information too. But is it more of a challenge in a way? Because like they don't necessarily want to talk to you in the way that a medium session may go down.
Typically, I was going to say typically I don't know. I mean, if I'm going to go to Gettysburg and I'm going to go into the Jenny Wade house, I'm going to know what Jenny Wade's story is.
Right.
Or if I'm going to go into the battlefield, I'm going to know what happened on the battlefield. If I'm going to go to the Stanley Hotel, I'm going to know about Stephen King and I'm going to know some of the stories about the Stanley Hotel. I mean, I can't live in a cave and under a rock.
Right, exactly.
You know, but many times if I've gone to locations, like on Paranormal State, I go in blind with no foreknowledge. So, you know, it's not that difficult. Usually if I go in and try to facilitate some level of communication, I very rarely come up dry with nothing. I mean, there have been times, absolutely, where I've come up with very little. Sometimes the dead are dead. And, you know, you don't get a lot of stuff, but it all depends. And I'm a strong proponent of the fact that it is the combined energies of the living and the dead that produce results.
Interesting. Okay. In a ghost hunt or in general, in one of these sort of sessions, like any time you're trying to tap into this?
Anytime. It is the combined energies of the living and the dead that produce the results. Here's an example. I lived in a house that was very paranormally active from the time I was 10 to 14 in New York. That house was a pretty much a constant hotbed of activity. To the best of my knowledge, many of the people who have lived in that house since then haven't experienced a lot of activity. So I believe that the energies of my family and myself and the people who came in and out of that house at that point in time, combined with the spirits who were in the house, facilitated the results. Look at Amityville. The Lutz family says that they were beleaguered when they were in that house, but people after that, really not a lot. The folks at Haunting in Connecticut House in Southington, you know, Carmen Reed and her family, the Snedeker family, lived in that house, and they had crap happen for 2.5 years. But the people henceforth haven't had a lot of things happen in that house. So it really, and I've gone to events where, you know, if you've got people that have been drinking or they've had some cocktails before dinner or whatever, that can affect, there are many things that can affect making that interactive communication happen or not happen.
Yeah. That makes sense, yeah. Well, we've talked about that on the show with regards to all this stuff, in a sense where it's like someone sees a UFO, it's as much, you know, it's a dance, as we've described it on this show, a dance between the UFO and the person. What makes up, what the steps of that dance are, we're still trying to figure out. But
I've been to James Gilliland's ranch where we sat and beat drums and called them in and things like that. I went for an episode of Paranormal State, so I've had that little bit of a brush with the whole UFO world. That's really one of the only brushes that I've ever had with the UFO world was I did an episode of Gilliland Ranch, which was very interesting for me.
Hmm. Now, you talked about how I think you said it was Paranormal State, how the show didn't continue. It was more of a money issue. I guess what I'm interested in this line of questioning here is sort of like the media and the paranormal. People always ascribe sort of these nefarious agendas behind the media when it comes to the paranormal, but I think really in reality that it's probably a lot more mundane, in the sense where it's like if a show gets canceled, it's like it's a decision made by the bean counters in accounting, or it's, you know, it's like an advert, you know, we don't get enough advertisers for this show because the demographics aren't right, and it has nothing to do with like the actual subject matter. But I mean, what's your experience sort of dealing with, let's say, sort of like the bureaucracy of television when it comes to these paranormal programs?
The networks are a business. They rely on their advertisers. If a show's not scoring well and not making money, it's not going to continue. And that just makes sense. Whether it's a reality show, a paranormal show, whatever it happens to be, any kind of a show that's not making the network money, why are they going to piss their money away and put money into a show that's not profitable for them? That just doesn't make any sense. That's ignorant. It's like buying stock that you're losing money on.
Right, right.
That's crazy. So, you know, I know that there have been, you know, changes that have gone on some of the paranormal shows that people have tried to say there was scandal. People, when I stopped doing Paranormal State, people were like, oh, he got fired from the show. I never got fired. I was never a regular cast member. You can't fire somebody that's not been hired.
Yeah.
I came on as a guest. Can't fire me. You could say they're not going to use me anymore. That's not true. I elected to go on and do other things. So was I fired? No, I wasn't. There was some contention about a couple of my friends recently about them being fired from a show. Some people said they were fired. They contend they weren't fired. I tend to believe they weren't fired. I tend to believe that they couldn't come to they couldn't get contract negotiations to work, and they elected to walk away.
Right.
But you know, there was a lot of stuff about someone leaving another show. One of a triumvirate, a tricky trio of cast members on another show that I won't mention the name of, but the initials are Ghost Adventures. And, you know, why did Nick leave Ghost Adventures? And why did Grant leave Ghost Hunters? And, you know, all these people, yes, I'm sure there's a story behind that, but it's probably not as sensational as people want to try to make it.
Exactly.
And, you know, sometimes it's just, I really don't want to be here anymore.
Right, right, exactly. No, you hit the nail on the head. It's like people in this field, they want to, they can't just say, I don't know. They have to fill in the blanks, even on human events, even in human affairs.
And people love gossip and scandal.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Well, it seems like I was saying, it is seems like it's sort of like, the decisions by these networks are often more made by the detergent companies and the pharmaceutical companies that buy the ads than it is someone who's like, I don't believe in ghosts, so cancel the show. It's like, they don't care.
I have lots of friends who are network executives. I met with many of them while I was in New York. You know, I had breakfast with the head of A&E. I had a meeting with some of the very big wigs at Discovery Channel. I had lunch. This was all on the same day. My head was kind of spinning after this day. Breakfast with the head of A&E. A meeting with all the big wigs, a lot of the big wigs at Destination America and Discovery Channel, and then lunch later with a heavy hitting producer. So my head was kind of spinning, and I love them all, but dealing with the network can sometimes be very frustrating because of a lot of factors. You know, they've got their way of doing things, and you know, and they don't do things on the same time frame that I necessarily or other people do them on. And it can be a frustrating relationship, but it's necessary for those of us who work in that arena to kind of, you know, play along, play the game, and however long the show lasts, that's fine. It's, you know, Paranormal State was a great ride for me. Psychic Kids was a great ride for me. I've been off television 5 years, And I've gotten a lot of offers in that time frame. A lot of people have come to me pitching things. And I've been asked to be a part of a number of things. Instead, I've waited kind of until I felt I was ready and the right things were coming at me. I've done some guest appearances on things. I've worked to stay current and relevant. I'm pretty active on social media. So, you know, even though I've been away from television, I've had a lot of reruns go on. And I know how the networks work. When the time is right, they're going to green light the thing that's going to work. And I'm going to go back and work with them. So although it's kind of a frustrating exercise sometimes, it's just the way it works.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, it seems like a difficult it's a whole different world, you know, and it's a difficult sort of world to navigate if you're
to say the least.
Coming in, yeah. But it seems like you know, you do good stuff, so, you know, I'm sure that it's good in a sense for you because you sort of have this cachet now where maybe you can kind of like develop. Did you develop Psychic Kids on your own, or was that something that was like brought to you coming out of Paranormal State?
I did an episode of Paranormal State that was called Vegas or Las Vegas. I don't remember the exact title of the episode, but it was me working with a very young female who was a medium who was being visited by a murdered girl. And they saw the interaction that I had with the young girl. They knew that I'd worked in traditional therapy and counseling with children and adolescents in the past. And on that episode, interestingly enough, there was an executive from the A&E network on location with us, with the executive producers, and I think they started having conversations at that point in time about the possibility. I think they'd already thought about this a bit, but I think that that's when it came to the forefront, that they actually saw the evidence of what was going on, and maybe they set it up. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was kind of, I think, when Psychic Kids, that show, became a reality. So in essence, I think I was the cornerstone of that show, and then they built the rest of the show kind of around that.
Hmm. Okay. Well, like I said, well, it's cool that you have this sort of cachet now where you can kind of maybe develop your own stuff. You know, you get your foot in the door, you can come up with good ideas for.
Well, and that's, you know, and just like I'm doing with my new web series, you know, I'm not constrained with my web series by a network. I'm not constrained with anything except my production partner that I'm dealing with. And, you know, we don't have to play Mother May I to anybody. We can produce our own content without having to pass anything by the powers that be. You know, we're the decision makers on this. So there's a sense of freedom that comes with that, if you will. And I'm enjoying that process a bit. I mean, we're just kind of diving into it. We're coming into post-production on the first four episodes. And we're just enjoying the ride a bit to see how this is going to play out, kind of a proving and testing ground for how this is all going to play out. So it's interesting to be able to kind of develop my own stuff. I'm enjoying that.
Hmm. Here's sort of like a broad question in a sense. I don't know if you ever really, well, maybe you have considered this, but it's like as we get further advanced in this world of artificial intelligence and technology and stuff, and you know, humanity has grappled with the question of what happens to us after we die since we first formed the question in our minds as cavemen. Do you think that maybe these two courses will someday collide in a sense? I guess the question really is, do you think humanity will ever fully understand what happens after we die, you know, while we're in the living realm, you know, in our lifetime? Not in our lifetime, but just, you know, will we ever unlock the secret, I guess?
I thoroughly doubt it.
Yeah. Do you think it's impossible to, or do you think it's just, why do you thoroughly doubt it? Because, I mean, they put a man on the moon. It's surprising they can't figure this out yet.
Since people started dying, I think death has become the greatest mystery to the living. I think, you know, we're all trying to figure it out. You know, is it lights out? Is it roll credits? The end does the essence of who we are simply cease, or do we continue on in another form? Does that energy go on? I mean, that's the huge question.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is whatever you believe. I mean, there's been studies that have been done. The body weighs less when the spirit leaves, or this has happened. And your people like Raymond Moody have examined near-death experiences and the afterlife. And, I mean, scientists have really looked into this, but there's no conclusive, irrefutable proof of life after death.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't exist. I don't know why I feel that you're, that it, I'm, let's put it this way. I'm doubtful that we're ever going to have a real handle on the afterlife.
Hmm.
I'm doubtful. I'm really doubtful. I think that to a greater or lesser degree, it's always going to be kind of based on beliefs.
Yeah, well, it's a black and white situation in a sense, because it's like, unless you die, you can't say for certain that that's the answer. You know what I mean? So, and then once you die, you can't necessarily come back and confirm it. So it's a very,
right.
You know.
And I think for most people, that's their biggest fear. I think that their biggest fear is that when the brainwaves stop, when the heart stops beating and the breath doesn't come anymore, that that's just, that's it. I mean, it's roll credits, the end. I think, you know, to me, that's the most frightening thought of all. That everything that we're doing here, everything that's around us, I mean, everything that's around us right now, all our stuff, all our relationships, all that stuff is eventually going to either end completely or be dramatically altered.
Hmm.
So to me, that's a little unnerving. That's a little unnerving.
Right. Well, I talked about this with Rosemary Ellen Guiling a long time ago on the show, where it's like, you know, we've talked about sort of a UFO disclosure on the program where they're like, you know, oh, the world will go crazy if we found out aliens were real and all this other stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I think the real thing is, it's like the world would go crazy if we knew what happened after you die, because it would change the game of life. It would, if you found out that there was nothing to life after you die, then people would just completely go bonkers. Some of them would. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think that lots of times that's what faith is. Faith tells us to be a good person. And in my discussions with my spirit guides, I asked them a long time ago, in a moment of quiet reflection, I just said, what is the meaning of life? What really is the meaning of life? And they laughed at me, and it pissed me off a bit because I thought it was a valid question. And they said to me, Chip, the meaning of life is very simple. Just get through it the best way that you can. Make good conscious decisions in the moment and then move on. And I thought, that's a real glib and pat answer. You've got to give me more. And they said to me, you who are in the human form tend to complicate everything when it really isn't as complicated as you make it. It's usually pretty simple. They said, we, the great we, God, the universe, Buddha, Allah, Yahweh, whomever, spirit, God, Jesus, whatever, all we ask of you is two things. Do no intentional harm to yourself or to others, and get happy. That's it.
Yeah.
All we ask. And I thought even that was very simplistic. I wanted to complicate it, and they said, just keep thinking about it. And in its simplicity, it became kind of all-encompassing and enormous. Because think about it. Don't hurt yourself or others intentionally, and find whatever makes you happy and strive for it. That covers a lot of ground.
Right, right.
But I think that religion is a way, religion and belief systems have always been kind of a way to keep people in check. Oh, if you don't treat people well in life, then you're going to suffer in the afterlife. It's kind of like it's kind of like wagging the God finger in your face. So, you know, I think religion serves a purpose to keep people a little bit in check. But beyond that, you know, afterlife, what's it like? People say, why don't you ask these questions? Because somehow on this certain level, I know I'm not going to get a lot of answers.
Right, right. And it's like, I don't even know what the point is to ask, in a sense. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't even know what the rules of the game are. I don't know. Is there a veil of secrecy? Are there things that can and cannot be told about that realm? I don't know what that is, but I've just, you know, and for whatever reason, Tim, I've never really asked a lot of those questions. I've been given little glimpses, but I've never asked for a full tilt tour.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting. And just to, just to circle back though, like why, it's just something you just don't feel like you want to know, or something that you don't know if you could comprehend, or what, like why have you not, or it's just something that doesn't interest you. Like why have you not pursued that line of questioning?
I think, as I said, probably not as effectively as I wanted to. I don't know that I would receive the answer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And I don't really also know that I want to know. there's a part of me that's just like, I just don't want to know.
Yeah.
Right. And I can't explain that, but that's just kind of how I feel.
Hmm. That's fair, you know? I think that's fair. And I'm sure a lot of people might, you know, take issue with that. But it's like, why? It's your right to not want to know. You know what I mean? It's that to me is, that's your right to not want to know that. So I see no problem with that. Well, we're nearing the end of the show here. Let me make sure let's do some plugs here, because we got about 7 or 8 minutes here. So first, as I said, we'll be seeing each other in a couple of weeks, and that's going to be at the East Coast Paracon. And folks can find out more about that at eastcoastparaconference.ca, or just punch in East Coast Paracon and Liverpool, Nova Scotia. That's going to be August 7th, 8th, and 9th, as I said, in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. Chip will be one of the big names there over the weekend. Also, Stan Friedman and Lauren Coleman, who BOA Audio listeners know and love, they're going to be there as well. Also, our good buddy Paul Kimball will be there. He's the one that put me on to this event. And I will be there. I will be in attendance. I have no Yay. Role in this, so I'm just a fan in attendance, which is usually the best way to be at some of these events, because then I can just kind of meander around, which is going to be fun. And, yeah, so folks can find out more about that again at eastcoastparaconference.ca. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Chip. I think we're going to have a lot of fun up there in Canada.
I think we are, too. I love Nova Scotia, and I've done some really fun events in Halifax. And, you know, I've got a nice group of fans in Halifax. They started a web page for me called Bring Chip Back to Halifax at one point in time, so I'm very appreciative of that. And if I can give a couple of plugs, you know,
absolutely.
If you go online to chipcoffee.com, chipcoffey.com, that's probably the best launch pad for anything Chip Coffee on the net. There's links to my Facebook page, my Twitter page, my Instagram page, my whatever
yeah,
pages.
Geez,
you can find me there.
All over there.
But all my events are listed there. All my scheduled events are listed on my website under the events and public appearances. You can learn how to get a private reading. I've got my little merchandise shop link there. So there's lots of cool stuff on chipcoffee.com. And like I said, that's probably the best place to start out from for learning about who this crazy man is you spent some time with this evening.
Yeah, there you go. What are you going to be talking about so I know what to look forward to at the East Coast Paracon? What's
Actually, I'm going to be doing some readings, which
nice.
Is going to be kind of fun. I'm actually going to be talking to some dead people and doing some psychic readings, and I understand also that there may be a little investigation that's involved with it. I never know. They just kind of push me where they want me.
Exactly.
You know, that's just kind of it. I just kind of show up going, lo-dee-do-dee-do-dee-do, and they go, oh, you're on in 5 minutes. Okay.
Yes. Yes. You have a better constitution for it than I do, because I heard about the event and I'm like, just get me a seat in the audience. I don't want to be pushed or prodded anywhere. And then
point
me to the nearest bar.
People ask me if I get stage fright or nervous or anything, you know? No. I'm over 60 years old, and the deal is, at this point in time, I just roll with the punches.
Yeah, exactly. You know, once you've been in this for a while, it seems like stage fright goes away pretty easily, because you're just doing another show, man. It's just another show. So I'm looking forward, like I said, to meeting you up there in Canada. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We may need to have a minder, because between you and I, between the laughs, and I think it's going to be an adventure. We got to make sure there's no international incident, though.
I don't want to be deported from Canada and considered persona non grata. You know, my Canadian friends and fans and family, I love them dearly, and I love going to our neighbor country to the north. So I'm going to try to be at least publicly on my best behavior. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. I will as well, folks. So
no one can tell, though. I may not misbehave, but I may not fully behave 100%. Let's just leave it at that.
There you go. I like that. That'll be that'll be the standard by which I also try to hold myself to at the event. Again, August 7th, 8th, and 9th, East Coast Paracon. I'll be there. Chip's going to be there. Lauren Coleman, Stanton Friedman, Paul Kimball. Also, other speakers, Barbara Thompson, Steve Vernon Oikel, Daryl Walsh, and Charles Barkos. And, of course, if you want to find out more about Chip Coffee, head on over to chipcoffee.com, chipcoffey.com. That's where you can find out where Chip's going to be speaking and more about his web series. When do you expect the web series to drop, and does it have a title?
It does, but they made me promise not to tell about it.
Okay.
Yet, but we're hoping that it's going to drop sometime in the fall. And of course, as I said, I'm very active on social media, and I'll be talking a lot about it as soon as they give me the okay to announce. I will be announcing it, but understand that it's going to be a different side of me. It's going to be a fun kind of frivolous side of me with a little bit of ghostly stuff and psychic stuff kicked in also. But mostly, this is a focus on just having fun with some of my friends.
Okay. Is this like a talk show, or is it like an on-location, you-go-places type of show, if you don't mind me asking?
It's more of a talk show.
All right. Nice. Nice.
It's more of me having a good time socializing with my friends.
Sounds a lot like what we do on here, so it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It is, you know, and like I said, it's going to be kind of a fun little lighthearted romp. And, you know, I think people are going to enjoy it. I'm knocking wood on my desk right now. Hopefully people will enjoy it. And I've enjoyed this. Thank you. Some great questions. I've got to give you that, Tim. You threw some very thought-provoking questions at me, and I'm grateful for the fact that you had me on this evening. Thank you.
I really do. I really do appreciate you coming on the show, Chip. So thank you so much. And, you know, like I said, I'm a total neophyte on all this stuff. So hopefully I did well and represented well, and also, you know, came at this with a skeptical, somewhat, but open mind as well. You know, fairness. That's all I'm asking for.
You were very fair, and I appreciate that.
Well,
and I look forward to hanging out with you when we get to Nova Scotia, my friend.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Chip, and I will see you soon, my friend.
Thank you. Safe travels up to Canada, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Good night.
Thanks. You too.
All right, folks, there you go. That was Chip Coffey here on Banal of America Audio. You can find out more from Chip at chipcoffey.com, chipcoffey.com. And if you want to check out the big event we'll be at in a couple of weeks, again, that is East Coast Paracon. And you can find out more about that at eastcoastparaconference.ca. If you're just listening to this program via Blog Talk, first of all, you got to get over to Banal of America and check out the shows there, because you're only getting half the pie here on Blog Talk Radio. And so if you want to know more about us, head on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. We are also on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America on Facebook. That'll bring up the page where you can find out the latest from BOA. Check it out and like us, folks. What you just heard was a live edition of the program here with Chip Coffey. And over the last 5 weeks, we've had a slew of international guests on Banal of America. And as I noted to Red Pill Junkie, the bill is rather astounding here for our international expedition. So we're turning to the BOA audio listeners to help us pay for our travels of the last 5 weeks and get us back in the black, especially since we'll be doing actual travels in a couple of weeks up to Canada, and that's going to cost me a bit to attend the East Coast Paracon. So how can you help us out? That's simple. There are two ways to do so. Head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, you can do so by heading over to Banal of America and finding our P.O. Box address. It's right there next to the PayPal button. Just fire something off to us. It would be greatly appreciated. As we always say here on the program, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, commercial-free, and providing one-of-a-kind content for our listeners and readers all over the world. Now, let me see. Today is July 21st. I'm going to be heading up to Canada towards the end, the middle of the first week of August. So in about, I don't even know. I can't count that far. 2 weeks. Heading up to Canada in 2 weeks. So there's a good chance, I'd say a better than good chance, we'll do one more BOA audio before I make the trip up there. I'd also like to do a show while I'm up there, maybe with Paul Kimball, since I'll be hanging around with him up in Canada. So I can't make any definitive plugs right now. Can't make any definitive plugs. But
stay tuned to Banal of America and BOA on Facebook, where we will update you on what is next for Banal of America. As I said, I'd like to do one more show before I head up to Canada, and I'd love to do a show while I'm up there. I'll definitely be bringing the handheld recorder, so I'll probably be doing some on-site interviews as well, and those will be rolled out later on in August when I get back from the Great White North. So there's a lot cooking here at Banal of America, but I cannot tell you just yet what is on the menu. So stay tuned and eat some breadsticks, and we'll have something for you before you know it. And on that note, we say goodnight for the evening. Thanks once again to Chip Coffee for coming on the program. Really, really fiery conversation. Really passionate dude. I really enjoyed that conversation a lot. And I hope the BOA Audio listeners did as well. Thank you to the hardcore BOA listeners, the ones who have been with us from the very beginning. And, of course, thanks to the BOA Audio listeners who have just found us and have adopted us as part of their paranormal podcast mix. You guys are awesome. You are the fuel that drives the BOA mothership. Thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal. Thanking you for listening and signing off.